This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, we're going to be hearing from Rosalind Kintzler, who is chair of the USDF Youth Programs Committee. And in the education segment later on, we have part two of the three-part series of Going in Circles from the 2014 Adequan USDF Annual Convention with Dr. Hilary Clayton. But first, we have the results from the Adequan FEI North American Junior and Young Rider Championships presented by Gotham North. The junior individual was won by Helen Claire McNulty from Region 2, riding Checkmate, with a score of 70.816. The silver medal went to Camille Bergeron from British Columbia, riding Delfiano on 70.079, and the bronze medal to Chloe Taylor from Region 9 with Colecto V on a score of 70.053. The junior freestyle gold medal went to Barbara Davis from Region 3, riding Rotana with a score of 71.825%. The silver medal to Helen Claire McNulty from Region 2, riding Checkmate, with a score of 71.725, and the bronze to Camilla Bergeron from British Columbia, riding Delfiano, with a score of 71.375. The 2015 Young Rider Champion is Natalie Pye from Region 3. She rode Fritz Santino to a score of 69.132. The silver medal went to Kat Chamberlain, riding Avesto van Veltevreden with a score of 68.711, and the bronze, Neymar Moreira Lalibert from Quebec, riding Delafont with a score of 68.447. Neymar then went on to win the Young Rider Freestyle competition with a score of 71.825. The silver medal went to Hannah Bauer from Region 1, riding Trustful for a score of 70%. And finally, the bronze medal went to Kerrigan Glush from Region 2, riding Vaquero HGF with a score of 69.050. Canada Ontario won the gold medal in the junior team competition, with the silver medal going to Region 7, which comprised Veronica West, Shelby Roccoretto, Brianna Relluccio, and Mia Slaughter. And Region 9, with Chloe Taylor, Madison Lacey, Bronwyn Cordiac, and Alison Hopkins, took the bronze medal. In the Young Riders, Region 7 returned to win the gold medal for 3 years in a row. Their team of Kat Chamberlain, Lindsay Bruin, Cassidy Goldman, and Samantha Jenner beat Region 3 with Natalie Pye, Mallory Kent, Lindsay Holliger, and Rebecca Roman, with the bronze medal going to Canada's Alberta British Columbia team. The USDF would also like to recognize Leslie Steele, chef d'équipe for the Alberta British Columbia team, won the Albers Award, named in honor of longtime USDF Region 1 chef d'équipe and supporter and good friend, Patsy Albers. This award is presented annually at the USDF Platinum Performance North American Junior Young Rider Dressage Championships to the dressage chef d'équipe who best demonstrates the same level of dedication, enthusiasm, and team spirit that Patsy had shown throughout the years. Well, joining me now is Rosalind Kintzler. She's chair of the USDF Youth Programs Committee, and she's currently in Kentucky for the Adequan FEI North American Junior and Young Rider Championships presented by Gotham North, and enjoying the Kentucky Horse Park, which is an annual pilgrimage for you, Ros.
Yes, it is. I've come for many years as a chef for our USDF Region 2 teams, and this year I have a new hat. I'm coaching a rider on our Region 2 junior team. Always very much fun.
Well, it's an opportunity to catch up with you and talk about the youth programs here at the USDF. So why don't you begin with giving us an overview of the committee and the work that you do there and how youth can get involved?
This committee really is designed to open the door to dressage for youth members. And, you know, youth members, of course, are 21 and under. Grassroots is an overused term, but it's basically explaining to all youth members that dressage is available to you at any level, and hopefully it will interest you and grab your focus, and you will enjoy the sport as much as we all do.
Talk about some of the work that you do there at the committee, Roz.
What we do at the committee, we have a variety of programs. We design programs. We'll discuss them. We have a new youth recognition PIN program, and the committee draws guidelines for that. We are involved somewhat with dressage seat equitation. We have a youth volunteer award, youth volunteer of the year award, which is quite a prestigious national award. We also have the Young Rider graduate program for older youth, if you will, 21 to 26, for those of you that are leaving the junior ranks and trying to make the transition into the open ranks of competition or as dressage professionals. We help to, not procure is not the right word, but we have scholarship grants, convention scholarship grants. There are a couple of programs that are near and dear to my heart that I would like to talk about a little bit, if that's all right. And this youth recognition PIN is a brand new program that we drew up this year. And this is for any level rider, for students that are grade 6 through 12, or if you're homeschooled in that level of education. It's designed to recognize your riding, not just your riding achievements. There's an academic criteria for it and a volunteer criteria, because volunteers run our organization. And you can volunteer in anything. It needn't be a horse-related activity, anything at all. We guidelines for a little bit for a competition. You can get minimum scores at any kind of dressage show, unrecognized, 4-H, as long as whoever is judging that show is either an L graduate or a recognized judge. So it opens it up to all of you to be recognized for your achievements in the sport at a low level, even be a high level. There's lots of opportunity for you. And we hope to work it so that as you apply for the PIN, that application is on our website, our youth website, that you earn your first PIN and you can do it again the next year for a second year PIN. And we hope the program will grow and those PINs can go on your show coats and everybody can be quite impressed with your dressage achievements in general. The shining star is our sportsmanship award, which also is so important. And the sportsmanship award, the shining star award, you needn't even be a member for the award, but it's designed to recognize an outstanding achievement as a sportsmanship achievement. In other words, somebody that really goes above and beyond in their effort. One of my examples is a young man that was on one of our Region 2 teams many years ago, and this is last year, and he was riding in the freestyle and didn't realize he could not remove his hat during the test, which was allowable at that point in time. He was leading the competition, did the last part of his freestyle, took his hat off, and was disqualified. We gave him the option because our team actually medaled at that competition. We said, because it was such a heartbreaking thing for him, you don't have to, if you don't want to ride in the awards, it's okay. We will be happy. He dressed, mounted, rode in the awards, and earned his shining star, and he is a young professional now. He wears a star on his shad belly when he competes. And that's the kind of thing that we hope winning a sportsmanship award like that, you know, will generate others and impress them. Now, also, though, we have a new thing with the Shining Star Award, which is the Revel Grant, which is a terrific opportunity to be used for some kind of educational activity. To earn a Revel Grant, you have to earn a Shining Star, and you do have to be a youth member. And all of these guidelines are on our USDF website, so they're easily accessible. If I can do it, I can find it on the youth page. I'm sure all of you computers, every kid can. But it's a great thing. We have 4 Revel scholarship award winners this year. It's a $500 grant. So it's well worth it. We also have a convention grant to attend the USDF convention, which I would very much recommend you do if you can, because you get to meet other youth members and just exchange experiences. Gives you a chance to meet all kinds of dressage focused people, and hopefully encourage your interest in it. We also have an art contest that actually I didn't even know that much about, and I had to look it up. There are age levels. And we use these art projects in our publicity things.
And these all have deadlines, of course. Can you tell us what they are?
Oh, yeah, they do. I had to write them down because I get confused. We're trying to get them all together. The convention scholarship deadline, the application is due August 15th. The Youth Volunteer of the Year Award is August 31st. And the USDF nominations for the USEF, which gets pretty confusing, the Sportsmanship Award are due to USDF by September 1st. And then we evaluate them and send them on to USDF. I'd forgotten to mention the Youth Programs Advisory Subcommittee. This is a subcommittee that works jointly with the Youth Programs Committee for the age on that is 14 to 28. And basically, we hope that they will be a voice for youth members for maybe programs they'd like to see that then the Youth Programs Committee can potentially implement. And we try and get this is a huge country, but we try and get as good geographic representation. And you can send in, if you're interested in doing this, a letter of intent. Those are due September 1st. And of course, the Young Writer Graduate Program. And that is that application is due October 30th.
Now, of course, being at Young Writers this week, it's an opportunity to talk to youth and engage them in the USDF program. So how do you sort of encapsulate what the goals are of the committee and why they should get involved with the USDF, Roz?
Okay. The goal of the committee is to really try and encourage youth to share our interest in dressage, but encourage youth to get involved in dressage. And USDF is very focused on grassroots membership. In other words, you don't have to feel like you don't even have to have a horse, frankly. But if you're interested in the sport, it's a perfect place for you to start because of the variety of programs that we offer. And maybe you can find a direction that really grabs your interest. If you don't ride, if you do ride, there are competition programs at the very lowest level. Regional championships we now have for youth members. And the Dressage Seat Equitation Program. And these are all basically, and even NAJYRC, North American Junior Young Rider Championships, these are developed through USDF, if you will. USEF is our administrator, but USDF, you would send your letters of declarations of intent to participate at Young Riders here, for example. So it gives you lots of possibilities to be involved in the sport. And regardless of what kind of horse interest you have, dressage certainly can help you and would like to help you.
Well, lots of opportunities, as you say, Roz, to get involved in the USDF programs as any youth member. Is there anything else that you would like to add, Roz?
Yes, I would like to add, we have a youth Facebook page, since I'm sure all of your kids are on it. And apparently it's fairly easy to find. It has information about these programs. They're carefully delineated on our USDF website, so you could read through them and get information clearly. So I'd encourage you to take a look at those. Really, it's worth the effort. I think it's a great sport and a sport you can participate in at any level, any kind of horse. So I would really, I think USDF is your place to do it.
Absolutely, of course. And lots more information on the website at usdf.org. Roz, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program this week.
Totally my pleasure. I'm glad to do it.
And now in our education segment, we continue with part two of the three-part short series here on Going in Circles, which was taken from Dr. Hilary Clayton's presentation at the 2014 Adequan USDF Annual Convention.
We can also use core training exercises, one of the carrot stretch exercises. And you can see from the wrinkles in the skin that the abdominal muscles underneath the skin are contracting and bending the horse to the right. Okay? So these core training exercises are very effective not just for suppling the horse. Don't think of them as flexibility exercises. Think of them as muscle strengthening exercises. Okay, they strengthen both the muscles that round the horse, the muscles that bend the horse, and the muscles that stabilize the back. And that was just one example of the dynamic mobilization or carrot stretch exercises. All of those exercises are useful for training the abdominal and the back muscles. The next exercise, this is again from the core training set of exercises. This is a stimulated bending movement. So what we're doing here is holding, it's actually a little blunted hoof pick, and when you just sort of poke that into the horse's muscle on one side of the spine, the horse will kind of reflexly bend away from that pressure. Okay? So we can very specifically stimulate the horse to bend to one side. We then go and do it, you know, equally to the other side. And if you do a belly lift at the same time, then the exercise is even more beneficial because that gets the horse's back up into the position that we hope we'll be riding him in. The other exercise that's actually very good for strengthening specifically the oblique abdominal muscles is riding up and down hills. So when the horse is going up a hill, he's getting propulsion from the hind legs. The muscles that push back and retract the hind leg are particularly active. And as those muscles are active, pushing backwards, they're also tending to twist the horse's spine a little bit. And in order to avoid that twisting, the internal oblique muscle turns on. So specifically, riding uphill is going to strengthen the internal oblique. And conversely, riding downhill, when the horse is overcoming the effects of gravity and using the protractor muscles of the hind limb, then the external oblique is stimulated to be active. So riding up and down hills is a good way to strengthen the horse's abdominal muscles. Now, recently, there's been a lot of interest from researchers in how horses turn and what are the effects of turning. Researchers in different parts of the world have all been simultaneously looking at the effects of turning. And I think we're beginning to get quite a good picture of what actually happens when the horse is turning and specifically being lunged. And I think some of you have heard this 1,000 times by now, but there might be somebody that hasn't heard it yet, so I'll do it again. So the deal with these ground reaction forces is that in order for the horse to be able to move his body, he has to push against the ground. And when the hoof pushes against the ground, and you know, Newton's third law of motion comes into play. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So if the hoof pushes against the ground, based on this third law of motion, we know that the ground is going to push back against the horse's hoof with a force that has an equal size, but it acts in the opposite direction. And this ground reaction force, the reaction of the ground pushing back against the horse's hoof, that's the force that actually moves the horse's body around. That's the force that pushes the horse. So the way this was developed was to put reflective markers on specific points on the horse's body. Now, these points are placed over the centers of rotation of the joints. Okay, and then the markers are reflective, and they're going to be tracked by a series of infrared cameras. So for this study, there were actually 10 cameras arranged in an array around the horse. And these cameras were flashing 120 times per second. And every time the cameras flash, they illuminate the markers on the horse, and the markers reflect back into the lens of the camera. So all the camera sees is these markers. And then all the cameras are connected to one master computer. And I tell the computer, okay, for example, this marker is on the shoulder joint, this marker is on the elbow joint, and I want you to connect those two markers. And we connect the various markers on the front leg to form a stick figure showing the scapula, the humerus, the radius, the canon, and the pastern segments. And the force plate measures those ground reaction forces that I was just talking about. So now we can look at the stick figures of the leg as it goes through its stance phase, and we can see how the ground reaction force changes. So in the early part of the stance phase, it's pointing just a little bit back towards the horse's tail. But as the horse's body weight is moving over that grounded foot, our force vector becomes more vertical, and then it ends up pointing slightly towards the horse's head at the end of the stance phase. But what I really wanted to show you is that if we follow these force vectors up, the vector on the front leg goes through the center of rotation of the front leg. And if we were to follow up the vector arrows for the hind legs, they go more or less through this hip joint. And the hip joint is the center of rotation for the hind leg. So these force vectors are going very close to the centers of rotation of the leg. They wobble around a little bit at the beginning because of the effect of decelerating the hoof when it hits the ground. Now, why do we care about that? Well, if the force vector goes through the middle of the joint, then what we'll call stresses on the joint are the least. If the horse has, let's say, a conformational defect, and the horse is knock-kneed, the knees are too close together, and the force vector going towards the outside of the horse's knee. And when that happens, there is more stress on the inside of the joint, okay? And when I mean stress, I mean a stretching force on the collateral ligaments on that side of the joint. And if we look at the opposite thing, if the horse is bow-legged, then the knees are too wide apart, and the force vector is going through the inside part of the leg, and we get more stress on the outside of the joints in the lateral collateral ligament. So store that information away. We're going to come back to it later. Now, finally, we're getting to circles. When the horse goes in a circle, the hooves have to generate a turning force. So they have to push on the ground, push against the ground in such a way that it's going to keep the horse's body turning around the circle. So this diagram is representing, this is a trotting horse. We've got the right front and the left hind on the ground, and they are generating, it's a centripetal force, a turning force that acts towards the center of the circle. And we, if we sort of translate that force so it's acting through the center of gravity, we can see that that turning force acts right to the center of the circle. Now, in people, we've only got one pair of legs. So that one pair of legs has to do everything. It has to provide propulsion, it has to do braking, slowing down, and it also has, they also have to provide turning forces. But with quadrupeds, we've got four legs. We've got two front legs, two hind legs that can fulfill these same functions. So the advantage that quadrupeds have are that they can divide up the responsibilities between the hind and the front legs. So the hind legs are responsible for the majority of the propulsion, and the forelegs are going to be responsible for the majority of the braking and steering. And this just shows the centripetal forces that I've measured in horses turning on a fairly small circle. And these columns represent the average centripetal force in the inside front leg, the outside front leg, the inside hind, and the outside hind. And you can see that both front legs do more turning than either of the hind legs. So most of the turning is coming from the front legs. Now, if we allow horses to come around a circle in their natural manner, what you find is that they lean to the inside, and as they lean to the inside, the hooves push against the ground, so they're pushing downwards and outwards. And when the hooves push downwards and outwards, the ground reaction force goes upwards and inwards. Okay, so this is providing that centripetal force that we need for the horse to be able to turn. But what I want you to notice here is where that force is aligned relative to the horse's leg. And it's going straight through the middle of the leg, right? So the torques around the joints, the stress around the joints, is going to be very low when the horse is actually leaning into the turn. So, you know, contrary to what we maybe sort of intuitively think, leaning might not be such a bad thing. Based on a lot of experiments in people and animals of various species, it seems that one of the prime functions of the neuromotor control system is to align this force vector along the horse's leg. Now, I've measured just how much horses lean in on the circle. And in horses going around a 6-meter diameter circle and not being interfered with, they weren't wearing side reins, we weren't, you know, trying to make them turn in any particular way, just left to their own devices, these horses leaned in by an average of 15 degrees. So quite a lot of lean on that small circle when the horses are able to choose how they go around the circle. And another research study has actually looked not just at the overall angle of the horse, but it measured the angles of each of the limbs and showed that the inside forelimb was placed at a more acute angle to the ground. So the inside forelimb was more angulated than the other legs. And, you know, when you think of a human skater, that's very similar. And by having the legs in this orientation, he's able to stay on his inside edge. It's the same thing when you ski. You turn, you want to be on your inside edges. That's more or less what our horse is doing. But there have also been studies with standardbreds using a thermographic camera to look for signs of inflammation on the limbs. And when the horses trained and raced around a banked course, there was less inflammation in the joints than when they raced on a flat racetrack. Now, one of the tools that we use to study horses moving on circles is inertial sensors. And these are little things, sort of smaller than a matchbox, if you can remember what a matchbox looks like. And we just stick them onto certain positions on the horse. But anyway, these sensors have in them an accelerometer which measures accelerations from which we can calculate the movements of the horse, and that's the important part. They also have a gyroscope that gives the rotational motion, a magnetometer that gives the orientation relative to the gravitational field, and often they have in them a GPS so you can also get direction and speed. These type of sensors are useful for studying locomotion because you can put them on the horse, you can send him out on the lunge, or you can go out and ride him, and he can go round and round and round and round, and they will record data continuously. Whereas in the lab, with the markers and the force plates, we can only look at one or two strides at a time. So these inertial sensors have been really interesting for studying movement over longer distances and especially on circles. So let's look at some of the research that's been done on circular locomotion in horses. So these data come from a study that I did with Dr. Fowle in Florida a few years ago, and we very much thank Kathy Connolly and Jen Merchant for allowing us to come in and make a mess of their barns and their horses for a week. But it was a really interesting study because we were able here to work with, you know, real sound competition horses. Often in research studies, you're sort of limited to the research horses owned by the university that are not representative of what we're all out there training and riding. But what we showed with this study, we had a fairly large group of horses, and we had them lunging on circles of different sizes, large, medium, small circles, and at different speeds, fast, intermediate, and slow speeds. And then because we had a GPS built into one of the sensors, we could actually track exactly where each horse had been, exactly the size of the circles they moved on, and exactly how fast they were going. And what we found was that As speed increased and as the circles got smaller, the horses would lean in further and the trot eventually became asymmetrical. So these were horses that were just being allowed to trot their own way, no side reins, no interference. And eventually they became asymmetrical on very small circles. Now, when we put the horses on the circle, what we found as the circle got smaller was that this line showing the vertical height of the pole, the withers, and the croup became asymmetrical on the inside and outside limb stance phases. So if we were looking at the pole or the withers and the inside front leg was on the ground, then we would see less sinking of those markers. And then when the outside front limb was on the ground, they would sink down further. And the same thing if we looked at the croup marker in relation to the hind leg stance phases. So the croup marker would have less sinking when the inside hind limb is on the ground and more sinking when the outside hind limb is on the ground. So what we actually see is that the horse, for example, if we talk about the pole is high when the inside front leg is on the ground, it's low when the outside front leg is on the ground. What does that look like? Looks just like a lame horse.
And we'll be concluding this short series with Dr. Hilary Clayton on the programme next week. Dr. Clayton will also be joining us again this year at the 2015 Adequan USDF Annual Convention, which takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada, in December. The link to the annual convention information, including the education sessions and full agenda of meetings, is at usdf.org. And don't forget, while you're on the website, to check out all the latest educational resources and information on eTrack. That's it for this week's episode. Be sure to keep up with us on social media, both on Facebook and Twitter. And remember that you can download this podcast from the iTunes podcast store so that you can listen to the show on the go via any podcast app. And our thanks to everyone, wherever you are in the world, for listening. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.